Morning, everyone. Welcome you all to this service this morning. It's good to see some visitors here. Today I'm going to talk about a topic that is it's a pretty hot topic. It's something we're all familiar with. It's something that we've heard a lot about. I might even step on some toes today because it might affect your personal life. It might imply something about someone that you know or spend time with, or so my goal today is not to step on some toes, but maybe to help wake us up a little bit. And so today's topic is about politics. And what are some of the things that pop into your head when you think about politics? Okay.
Government control.
Mm-hmm.
Devices.
Yep.
Scams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all those are really good. I'm going to talk specifically about politics, so there'll be some areas that might relate to this that I'm not really going to get into. I know in our discovery class this morning we talked about non-resistance, and that definitely goes along with it, but I'm not going to talk about that this morning. So. And I think Reuben is going to be doing a Sunday school lesson based on discussion topics about today's message. So feel free to write your questions down. And So in my research, and I should clarify that I'm basing a lot of this message off of the talk given by Dean Taylor. So if you guys have seen or heard that talk, you might be getting some repeat information. There'll be some new stuff as well. He did a lot of research on this, and he's doing it especially for his doctorate. He's getting a doctorate, and he's researching why Goshen College failed as a Mennonite college. And then he came across this and actually was propagating a lot of this. This is a really hot topic. So in his research, he came across this letter here written to a politician. It says, can you guys read that?
Yeah.
More or less. We feel deep gratitude for the powerful revival that God has given our nation through your energy and promise joyful cooperation in the upbuilding of our country through the power of the gospel, faithful to the motto of our forefathers, no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, those of you who haven't seen the Dean Taylor talk, can you guess who this was written to? Yes, written to.
13 colonies.
Okay. Can you guess who it was written from?
Is that true?
No. This letter was written by Mennonites in 1933, September of 1933, to a politician who was very popular at the time. And they got a response back from the politician that said, "For your loyalty and your readiness to cooperate in the building of our nation, expressed in your letter to me, I express my sincere thanks," from Adolf Hitler. And this letter was written by the Mennonites of Germany to Adolf Hitler during the beginning, right before World War II really broke out. So how many of you think that sounds a little bit familiar, like that type of language? We feel gratitude for the revival. We promise joyful cooperation. Maybe that's not quite what we've heard over the past year, but what about this one? This was written by Mennonites from Paraguay. "With the greatest excitement, we German Mennonites of the Paraguayan Chaco, follow the events of our beloved motherland and experience in spirit the national revolution of the German people. We are happy that in Germany, after a long time, a government that freely and openly professes God as creator stands at the head of the nation. With special sympathy, we hear that the current government takes seriously the realization of Christian principles in social, economic, and cultural life, and especially emphasizes the protection of the family." Does that sound familiar? It does. In fact, I found this post on Facebook by someone who most of us know. praying for President Trump's legal team, strong people that are standing up for the truth and facing great opposition. We need to pray harder than we ever have before, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. There's a spiritual war going on. I'm so thankful to be part of a heavenly kingdom. Now, it's not word for word, but I know that a lot of those statements, that those sentiments that went on back then, match some of our sentiments today. They mentioned Christian principles in social, economic, and cultural life. Like, that's where we are today. We really identify with politics because we see some of those issues that we really value being talked about. And this was really common. Now, I do want to clarify something. Trump is not Hitler, okay? Our nation is more divided than it ever has been, probably. Definitely, we saw some really sharp division in the past election. And the difference between the presidential candidates today and Trump was, or sorry, and then Hitler was, Hitler had a 90%+ approval rating in Germany. And none of our politicians today have that. But we do see a lot of Anabaptist people identifying, especially with Trump as a political party. I think in some cases to the same extent that these German Mennonites identified with Hitler back in the day. Here's a great example. This is supposed to, there we go.
It, knowing that, oh, they'll change it. In the history of politics, and you know, we have Pennsylvania Dutch. Don't tell anyone, you know, they're great people. They're great people, but they're not known for going out and voting for Roderick. Don't tell anybody, but the Pennsylvania Dutch are voting en masse. Huh? They're voting. I heard that the other day. They said, we can't have a man who sleeps. They work hard. We can't have a guy that sleeps all day in a basement. We can't. We like Trump. That's great. Thank you. A little relationship there. You know, a long time ago, a little relationship there. Hard workers, incredible craftsmen. You've done work for me over the years. I'll tell you, they can throw up a barn in about 2 days. They can throw it up, and they use the wooden cogs. They don't use screws because they want to make everything themselves, right? And that is the most beautiful place. Really, you do great work. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All right, so you see here a really good example.
Pennsylvania voted to fire.
Yeah, that was supposed to stop a while ago. Anyways, but you can see that Trump is really charismatic. He's really playing into the Amish people that were there at the rally. Like, they felt like $1 million, you can tell. And that is exactly what Hitler did 80 years before to those same people, to that same people group. And it works, like, and it doesn't just affect Mennonites either. There's another person that we all know well, John MacArthur said, I said to Trump that any real true believer is going to be on your side in this election. So we see not just Mennonites specifically, but Christianity in general, just really buying in to politics, especially right now, especially supporting one political leader. I mean, okay, now I should clarify that they are also supporting the other side as well. Shane Claiborne said, let me be clear, I will be voting on November 3rd. I believe this election is a referendum, and we have the power that we can steward on November 3rd. I want to look back and say I did everything I could, including vote. We need to use every tool in our toolbox. And he's the writer of the book, Jesus for President. So also very active in politics. So you can see there's just a lot of push for Christians to get involved in politics today. And then there's also a growing push, which I think is good, which was probably missing 80 years ago, against being involved in politics. Dean Taylor, president of Sattler College, said, President Trump knows how to influence the church. Church, listen, voting is not necessarily a sin. but I do believe it is a symptom of a greater problem. As modern conservative Anabaptists, in many ways, we have perfected the art of community building, but I'm afraid that this is a warning to us. To me, this is a sign that we are starting to forget what we started building in the first place. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. Which citizen are you a kingdom of?" Another person on a blogger that I found on Facebook, Dwight Gingrich, said, "The association of any earthly kingdom with Christ is an insult to the true king, one that he will not tolerate, and neither should we. Let me say plainly that Christianity's association with Trump's Republican Party has severely marred our ability to contend for the gospel in this generation. I cannot overstate how devastating I fear the consequences of these 4 years will prove to be for the church. Indeed, the political machinations of these days have eternal consequences. As a millennial, I fear that there are millions of young Americans in my generation that will be hardened to the hearing of the gospel of Jesus Christ for their entire lives because of what has been said and done and tolerated in the name of Jesus these past 4 years." Dean Taylor gave a talk on this, and he said, "The same theology, given similar circumstances, will very likely once again create the same result." So you can see strongly that we have the same theology, some of the same theology going on today as they had back then. We don't have the same circumstances, but what if those circumstances change? And we're probably not far away from those circumstances changing. So I guess this talk is more of a cautionary tale, a word of warning against how wrapped up we get in it. Let's look at an example from history. And for the sake, we are Mennonites as a church, and so we're going to look at some Mennonite history. And some of this is really going to, well, maybe it won't surprise you so much. So question number one, why did German Mennonites support Hitler so much? Well, you can see here, he actually, especially at the beginning of his term, he very openly professed Christianity. You can see here's a picture of him going to church. The picture under in the with the "Gott mit uns" on it, which is "God with us," that's a Nazi SS soldier's belt buckle. And that was common. That was used throughout all of World War II by the Nazi soldiers. That was, you know, he professed to be a Christian. He professed to love God. The Mennonites jumped on board. The Catholics jumped on board. The Lutherans jumped. Everybody jumped on board on the Trump train, or the Trump train, yeah. The Hitler train. But you can see where I'm going with this. All right, let's look what that happened, or what that did for us. So in 1933, German Mennonites wrote that letter that I read to Hitler, the one expressing their support of him. Later in 1933, the United Mennonites of Germany stopped asking for special treatment as conscientious objectors. So they stopped asking to be COs in German recruitment of their soldiers. And in 1934, they removed non-resistance from their confession of faith. So it seems like a big jump, but I don't think it was. There was even, so the result of that was that Mennonites joined the German army. And this here is actually a picture of a SS, a group of SS soldiers, and these are all Mennonites. And they were SS soldiers, which was like the elite of the German soldiers. They weren't just normal soldiers, they were the special soldiers. As a reaction to this, there was a new Hutterite colony emerged in Germany, speaking out against it. They really stuck to non-resistance, and the United Mennonites just denounced them. They said, "The Hutterites belonged to neither the Union of German Mennonite Churches nor to any other organization within our free German Mennonite Churches." So they just said, "Nope, we're not a part of that." Part of that was because of fear. Part of that was because they were just so wrapped up in it. So then what happened to these Hutterites? Well, they were eventually raided by the Germans, and they were forced to leave the country. They really had a hard time finding a place to go. They couldn't. There were people all over Europe that would not let them come because they knew that the Germans hated them and they just didn't want to get involved, right? They were scared. But eventually, a group of American Mennonites helped them flee to Paraguay. But when they got there to Paraguay, they were really surprised to see that Nazi values were there too. A Paraguayan student who was studying in Germany wrote, "If one lives in Germany, one is drawn involuntarily under the spell of the Führer and can do nothing else than confess oneself a National Socialist." So they flee Germany to get away from all this, and they come to Paraguay, and here it is too. So it was taking over the world. And then, so the Paraguayans were just really destitute. They were really poor. And these Mennonites from Germany actually did have, Hutterites from Germany did have some means, financial means, and so they wanted to help them out. And as they were helping them out, they walked into one of their churches and they found this. And you can't see it very well, but that right there behind the pulpit is a picture of Adolf Hitler hanging right behind the pulpit. Because, so in their defense, a lot of what was going on in Germany wasn't known by the German people. So they saw the front face of Hitler as being this nice Christian man. They didn't know that Jews were being killed and people were getting, you know, put into concentration camps and all that kind of stuff. Let's jump back into the timeline of the people in Germany. In 1939, Germany took over Prussia, and that allowed the Mennonites that were in Prussia to now interact with the people in Germany, because there was a sharp dividing, like they were at war, so they could not really interact at all. They couldn't send letters or communicate or anything. And the Germans in Germany, the German Mennonites, said, "Our German peoples have endured unspeakable difficulties under the Polish yoke during its 20-year foreign rule, the most difficult at the end. Then God, the Lord, helped them through the hand of our Führer and freed them. We thank our Führer for this act of liberation." So they're just buying into it. They're buying into it even deeper. In 1940, they wrote, "The conference will not do anything that would even have the faintest appearance of opposing the policies of our Führer." And you think that's bad? It actually surprisingly gets worse. This book right here is where a lot of this information comes from, actually. It's called Chosen Nation. It's a very good history of this account. And the picture that you see on the front here is soldiers rounding up Mennonites. But the worst part of it is that the soldiers are Mennonite soldiers. So you have going from being united with a country, and we see this as a great way to expand our faith and increase our productivity as Mennonites, and then by tying themselves to Germany, they were then forced to fight against their own people in the end, which is just very counteractive to the kingdom of heaven. That's not what God wants. Some Mennonites even hired slaves from Nazi concentration camps. They didn't know that they were in concentration camps, but they did hire laborers from those to work on their farms. And they even, some of the homes that were evacuated by the Jews, they just took over. They saw an empty house, they took over it. I mean, everybody did, but we see what happened. In the 1700s in Germany, the Mennonites were really well known. They even had, they were even visited by King Frederick the Great, because they were just so well known in the community. They were so well known as industrious people. Today in Germany, Mennonites are basically non-existent, or at least conservative Mennonites are. How close are we coming to that today? I mean, this is a common sight in the past 4 years. So yeah, I want to again read that quote from Dean Taylor. "The same theology given similar circumstances will very likely once again create the same result." So now the question comes to us, how far is too far? At what level? We know that some involvement in politics or political things is probably okay because there are some things that we as Christians should speak up about, right? So where do we draw that line? Well, here's probably where I'll give you more questions than answers, but choosing a political side. A lot of you have probably seen this picture. Something I want to point out about this, it says, Trump 2020, make liberals cry again, which we all kind of chuckle at. But really, it goes to show a point that often when we denounce a certain politician, we are inherently speaking out against the people that support them also, and also some of the good things that they may have done. And that's not Christ-like. That's hateful. What about RBG? We have a post here on Facebook that said, all God had to do was take out Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the plans of the wicked were ruined. That's just like a very hateful comment about her. And we know that RBG like is very disliked by Christians because she supported abortion. But what we completely forget is that she did some really good things. She declared it unconstitutional for state-funded schools to deny entrance for women, and she helped make it possible for women to apply for credit cards and mortgages. And like before she, you know, maybe she took her agenda too far, but she did really do some good things for people in our country. By publicly declaring her as evil and triumphing in her death, we end up alienating the person who was helped by her policies. And that's good or bad policies. What about the person who did feel like they were relieved through an abortion, and then we say, no, abortion is evil. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not supporting abortion at all. But we can't just attack that idea because we very likely are hurting somebody who's listening to us, especially as we speak out to the community around us. What about political sides, choosing a political side? Well, you inherently, with the good, choose the bad. Some bad things about the left are that they support same-sex marriage, abortion, they support removing faith from schools, they don't want religion in school. But then the right supports capital punishment, anti-immigration, preemptive military attacks, and decreased aid for people who really do need help. Now again, some of these policies are just bad in and of themselves. Some of them are bad to a certain level. And there's good things about both sides as well. But really, when we choose one side, we are denouncing the other side. We're saying, well, if you jump on the Trump train, then you are labeled, or you can be labeled a racist just because of some of his policies. And we know, I know people in this community that live in fear because of all of Trump's push on immigration and stuff like that. And like, there were people that were afraid that they were going to get deported, especially right when he got elected. They were just terrified. And that's not the spirit that we should be fostering in our country. There's also a push to choose the lesser evil. And this is another, I'm going to read a little bit more of that quote from Shane Claiborne. Let me be clear, I will be voting on November 3rd, but I will not be looking for a political savior. I will be looking to do damage control. I'll be trying to harness the principalities and powers of darkness that are hurting so many children of God. Now, did you just hear what he will be trying to harness the principalities and powers. I'll be voting for the politicians who I believe will do the least amount of damage to the world and alleviate the most suffering for the most people. Now, that statement sounds really good, but that's not really how Christ called us to fight. We, in the Bible, we're called to fight against principalities of darkness, not use them and harness them to our advantage. Jerry Garcia, a singer and lead guitarist of the Grateful Dead, not a Christian person, said, constantly choosing the lesser of two evils is still choosing evil. And Charles Spurgeon also said, of two evils, choose neither. And that's also sometimes that standoff attitude is just labeled as bad sometimes. But yeah, it's I think it is more biblical. What about political activism? Now, I want to be really clear that I'm not trying to denounce anybody. I'm not trying to say that all political activism is bad. There are some good things to support. But the reason I chose this picture is to help drive the point home that it really does matter to us. This is something that we are dealing with every day. This is something we're dealing with. And for those of you who don't know this person, we all know this person really well. I'll leave it at that. By defining activism, I want to define that a little bit. And that's anything from writing articles, boycotting, supporting a political campaign, attending rallies, street marches and parades, that kind of thing, speaking out against or about an idea. And political activism specifically is trying to use those means to make political change, make legislation change. There's some really good activism that's gone on in the past by Christians. We all know the story of, a lot of us know the story of William Wilberforce, who helped abolish slavery in Great Britain. He joined the Quakers, actually, and was kind of their face. Interestingly, a lot of the conservative Christian push against slavery was done by Quakers in Europe and the U.S. They were like the biggest push against slavery. Here's a post I found on Facebook. For the sake of unborn babies in Indiana, please share, pray, call your representatives. We cannot be silent. And this is referring to an article they were sharing. And so, like, we know that there are some really good things to support. But again, we have to be really careful about how far we go with that. Let's talk a little bit about some of our own American history. And this is actually a little bit more worldwide than just America, but the temperance movement in the late 1800s, early 1900s was a really big push. And we know how that started and ended. It lasted about 15 years. We wrote two constitutional amendments, and one abolished alcohol, and the other one allowed it again. Here's a clip from Billy Sunday, if I can get this thing to play. No, I couldn't get that to play. I guess it didn't.
I don't know who brother man guzzles beer standing at the bar or whether sitting down at a table. Who's sold to a preacher or a high school girl has the same effect as when it's sold to an automobile thief or a horse thief. Oh, America needed repentance. She didn't need rum. She needed righteousness. We don't need Jags. We need Jesus. We don't need more Brock. We need more God.
All right, so he was a really powerful Christian speaker who spoke out against temperance. Mennonites joined the temperance movement. There were Mennonite temperance societies. There were meetings at churches that were being held. And then we get to this guy right here. His name is Martin Brumbaugh, and he's a German Baptist bishop, all right? He wrote this in 1899. Temperance is a time-honored and Bible-sanctioned principle. The oldest temperance society in the country is the Church of the German Baptist Brethren. He also was a really big push for temperance, all right? So this is a bishop of a church in Pennsylvania just really pushing this idea of temperance. But ideas have consequences. Let's look at what happened to him. Some of the consequences are good, some consequences are bad. I should clarify, all ideas have consequences of some kind. Whether it's a good or a bad consequence is based on the idea. all right, so let's go back to him. He was elected governor of Pennsylvania in 1915. This is a German Baptist bishop, elected governor of Pennsylvania. He ran against Woodrow Wilson for president at one point. He lost, obviously. But during his term as governor, there was a revolt, and it was a labor dispute, I think, a labor union, and he had to call in the military to take care of it. And so, like, here's a German Baptist, very conservative. We would consider them more conservative than us, running as governor of a state, and then has to call in the military. Now, how do you think that affects his people when they want to list as a conscientious objector during World War II? Didn't go very well. Conscientious objectors were really stomped down and ridiculed during World War II. They were forced to join the military. They were treated very badly. Some of them almost killed because of what they were doing, you know, of standing up against the truth. And he declared World War II a holy war. So he was in support of World War II. So just the idea of, yeah, the same theology, given similar circumstances, will very likely once again create the same result. And so we have Mennonites in Germany fighting for Hitler, Mennonites in the U.S. fighting against it. And here's another clash of the church against the church. You know, maybe not directly, but indirectly. So I guess, like, the question is, where do we draw the line? How far is too far? Where should we draw the line? So how should we act as Christians? Now, this is, let's just take a look at how Jesus acted. In his encounter with Pilate, documented in John 18, I'm just going to read through this passage. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Now notice he didn't really answer the question. He just said, "Are you saying this of yourself, or are other people saying it about me?" Then Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" And again, Jesus doesn't answer the question, but his response is golden. He says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world." Jesus also talked about the leaven of Herod, what he called the leaven of Herod, and he said, and he cautioned them, saying, "Watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And this is like a very small passage in the Bible, but I did a little bit of digging. What is that leaven of Herod? And I found some really interesting things. Herod was sensitive to the Jews as a nation, and that could have contributed to him being more tolerant of him, maybe more willing to listen to him or enlist as a soldier or whatever. Same kind of thing that was going on twice now we saw in history, three times maybe, and that's just a short part of history. I mean, that's leaving out Constantine and all the, you know, the Roman Catholic Church, but Herod even went so far as to make money without images so that the Jews could own the coins without committing idolatry, because they believed that any type of image was bad, graven images, right? So they would just not use the money. So he made money for them. So did a lot of good things for them. There were some offensive shields that were put up in public display, and he helped get them removed. And he also posed as a Jewish leader and attended the Passover. So he was very involved in Jewish culture, trying to win them to his side. And Jesus called him a fox. And there's a reason. And he said, "Beware of the leaven of Herod." And so to me, that is the most direct teaching from Jesus about how we should be really careful about how far we get involved in politics. In John 15, he says, "If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." Does this sound like something that a person would say if they supported involvement in politics? Not really. So one last thing I want to look at is the call to be ambassadors. And this is something we can probably dive into a little bit deeper. I did write a post about this on my blog a while back, and you guys can read that if you want. But let's look at 2 Corinthians 5. It says, "We regard no one according to the flesh. Even though we once regarded Christ according to the flesh, we regard him thus no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. So that makes it clear that we're part of a spiritual kingdom now. Verse 20 says it really well. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. And what is that appeal? It says it in the rest of verse 20. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to Christ. I think that is just, that should be our message to the world. Not, hey, let's support this or let's not support this. Let's get away from that and not push our agenda through the world's politics, through the lens of the world, but let's push our agenda through the lens of Christ. God is calling us to serve him in his kingdom. How can we do that effectively if we are consumed by this kingdom?